This is Katie and Kay Carbondale. You're listening to Geek Speak on Katie and Kay. I'm your host, Matt McGriff from Roaring Fork Help Desk in studio with Louie the Computer Guy.
Hey, Matt.
Hey, let's see here. Where's the rest of this? Here it is. Support for Geek Speak on Katie and Kay comes from Louie the Computer Guy, providing PC and Mac repair, networking support, tutoring, and web design. Secure, informed, and connected. 970-948-7992. Here we go.
Hey.
All right. Where do we want to start with?
Well, I was going to ask you, what do you spend the most time fixing for your customers during the course of a week, an average week?
You know, it varies a lot. I'm trying to think. It's too far out. It's too far, like, you know, it's like some weeks it's like, oh, server's on the fritz. Sometimes it's, you know.
Got it. Week's a little bit different.
A little different.
And there's a different centerpiece to the,
yeah,
the drama, as
and
it were.
And there's a lot of, you know, the other one that I do a lot is a lot of clients will install. They're like, oh, I have a virus, and it's just a Chrome extension.
Got it.
You know, so they're like, oh my, you know, it's like I open Chrome and there's all these ads or whatever it is, and so you know,
got it.
So I go in and check the extensions and go, there's your problem.
So malware. That would be, you know, be web browser
malware. Yeah.
Malware. Extension malware.
Yeah. Somehow they managed to install an extension and you delete the extension and report it as malicious and then have Chrome run its scan and away you go.
Got it. I would say that at least lately I've been dealing with data loss amongst people with newer generation MacBooks, which is a hot topic for Matt and I, because Matt's working on doing a little Frankenstein project on a MacBook that I gave him to let me back up here. Was it late 2016 that they started doing this?
And I think some other companies have kind of headed this direction on other devices as well. But basically, the storage is soldered onto the board. It's all one board. There's no...
And when you say the storage, you mean
the
hard drive.
Yeah, the hard drive.
Which means, like, all of your stuff. Like,
yeah.
All your pictures, all your family pictures you've been collecting for God knows how long. So on and so forth, and all that other stuff, all those documents, all those legal documents, all the mortgage papers for the house that you just bought, all that. That's all on the hard drive.
Yep.
And
yeah, I've kind of moved towards calling it a storage device.
Okay. All right.
Just because, you know, you have hard drives, you have SSDs, you have EMMCs. Yeah, there's a bunch of different storage media, and then you have CDs and tapes and all kinds of other thumb drives and all kinds of other things.
Got it. So this is a silicon based storage device.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So it's basically a chip that's soldered onto the motherboard, and so if a person's logic board on their Mac goes down, which is probably one of the most common hardware failures on a Mac, right?
It's kind of the only hardware failure at this point.
Yeah, because it's about the only thing under the hood at this point.
Yeah, under the hood, there's a system on a chip, basically, which means that your processor, your memory, and the north and south bridge, the traditional north and south bridge, the devices, so those are basically, when I say a bridge, that's like, that goes between the processor and your USB.
Your external devices.
Your internal devices. It bridges all of the other guts of the computer together.
Yeah.
And that's basically all in one thing. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, on the board now, you know, then you have the storage chips. And I'll have to look on the M series. I think that storage may be integral to the chip as well.
Got it.
I'd have to go look.
Okay.
Look.
So if somebody's logic board craps out, that's a technical term.
Yes.
If it craps out, what are their options for getting the data? Say, for instance, you know, I have not been backing up my MacBook like I should, and I don't have second copies. Say I don't have iCloud Drive turned on, and my logic board craps out. What are my options for getting my data back?
Get the logic board repaired.
Okay.
That, I mean, I don't know that there's anything, there's not really anything else. You,
got it.
You have to hope that a 25-cent piece on the logic board has failed and can be found and replaced.
Got it. So, and what's the average cost of doing, like, you know, it's been a while since I've mailed out any logic boards. Or do you mail them out, you're getting like ready to like be the guy to fix them,
that.
Right?
Yeah, I think I got a quote for them to look at it because this is kind of the same situation. I think it was like $400.
Okay.
So don't quote me on that, but
yeah,
that's basically, I think, what the quote came back for. You know, it's like, hey, this person didn't have their computer backed up. Can you get it booted?
Okay. So you went the route of having it repaired. I had one, you know, this is, I guess we're at like opposite ends of the spectrum. So I had one, where I sent it in for data recovery and they were able to recover the data off of the storage device.
Mm-hmm.
It cost $4,000. So,
yeah, cause they're probably taking those chips off of the board, putting them into some sort of cradle, using tools to talk to them and
hooking up a controller chip and, you know, so on and so forth. Yeah. So anyway, you know, I guess what I'm trying to spell out to people is, you know, I guess the theme for today's show in my book is safety. You know, unless you are, cause I'm actually getting ready to ship a machine off to Drive Savers right now, a liquid spill, you know, a victim. And, so bottom line is go out, pick up a $69 hard drive, set it up to do Time Machine backup. Time Machine is so, once you get it set up, it is so unintrusive. You know, as long as the little hard drive is connected to your computer, it'll do its thing. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to hold your mouth in some certain way. You know, it'll basically sit there and back your computer up every hour, and you will have a very fresh and current backup of your computer if anything should happen. So that's one of the first things I wanted to talk about because, you know, so many people, I mean, and quite honestly, I fall into the trap myself of, oh, it's a solid state drive. Those don't crash, you know.
Well, no, they
do.
They have, well, and it's not, in the case of the Mac, it's not necessarily the drive failing. It could be the drive failing.
Uh-huh.
But
it's the parts around it.
But it could be, you know, the voltage regulator for the input. You know,
okay.
So it's like you can't charge. So it's like I have a computer, but it won't charge anymore because the charge controller chip has been fried. Which from what I've seen online, is one of the more common failure modes.
I'll look into that. And that's good to know.
But that's so, my point is that you have this whole let's just say $2,000 computer,
yeah,
and some part on that board where the parts, you know, $600-$700, that'd be like the processor or something.
Sure.
Or if it's a like a voltage regulator for the charge controller or something, if that, you know, 75-cent part goes, somebody has to either have to replace the computer or you have to find someone that can find that part, figure out that that's the failure and go from there.
Okay. Well, good deal. Matt's going to work on taking a call here really quick. It'll take him just a second. And, in the meantime, I was going to kind of like talk a little bit about, I'm dealing with a lot of scams these days. And so I wanted to kind of like just refresh everybody's memory that there is no such thing as a well-meaning person that's going to call you on the phone and tell you that your computer needs help. Hi, Donna.
It's not Donna, it's Greg.
Oh. You both.
I had a 50-50 chance.
I was talking to Donna, and then when I did the transfer, you came in. Huh.
Very. Oh, that's weird. Sorry, Donna. What's
Sorry,
up?
Donna,
what's up, Craig?
You've been usurped.
What's up, buddy?
I have a question about backups.
Okay.
This is an interesting topic.
All right.
I've got stuff from Windows 95, Windows 96. 2000, I've got Word, you know, 2000, 2010. If you back all that stuff up, because I've jumped it all up, you know, into each iteration of Windows, if my backup is doing this, if my computer crashes, will another computer be able to open those things without having to put those things back in, like the old Windows and the old Word, the old publisher, whatever.
Well, I'm going to say that because, quite honestly, I mean, I think Matt and I probably both get jobs all the time. People bring us an old, you know, Windows 2000 computer and say, I need you need to get these WordPerfect documents off of there or whatever.
Yeah, CWK, Apple Works.
Corel Draw. Claris Works. Remember
Claris
that one?
Works, yeah. Apple Works.
Yep. Yep. So now that I've demonstrated just how old I am, there are programs for the most part. I am yet to come across a file format type that wasn't openable using one tool or another. So I guess the answer would be yes. The only caveat would be if the file happened to be password protected or encrypted, then sometimes you'll run into trouble with opening it up.
So. With the exception of the publisher that you mentioned, basically LibreOffice will open even a corrupt. So I'll use LibreOffice to basically recover uncorrupt Word document files. So you basically open the file, Word comes up and says nope.
Uh-huh.
You fire up LibreOffice and open it with Word. It usually will fire up just fine. Then you do file, save it as a new file, and then Word's happy.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
I think in the last 10 years, I think I've only run into one situation where somebody had some files in a very arcane format, and I wasn't able to find. I think I ended up having to basically get the old computer running, load them into the program, and export them in something that was compatible with modern technology.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Are you trying to say that some of the other stuff was not modern? Just because it was modern then, it's not modern now?
Well, they chose a program whatever 25-30 years ago and used that until that format has been dead and gone long enough that there wasn't really a path forward for that file format. There wasn't some convert my Lotus 1-2-3 whatever it was to a document or something. I don't think it was Lotus, but
now you're talking my language, man. That's where I cut my teeth on Lotus.
Yeah. So, but my I think during my career, I think I've had that happen once where the format was so dead that I basically had to get the old computer running and then, export it into like a rich text format or something.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks. And sorry, Donna.
All right. The line's open. Take care, Craig.
All right. See you guys. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK, 970-963-2976.
We forgot to say that earlier.
Yes, we did.
The phone hasn't rang.
Yeah.
So there we go.
Let's try this again.
And let's see what kind of like great little nuggets she has here.
All right, let's try this again.
Please wait. I'm going to talk. Okay. We got it. Okay.
Let's try it.
Hey, Donna.
Hi, how are you?
We're good. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Good.
Yeah. I have a question for you. Well, I was listening to the show earlier, and, I still have a PC that I use for Quicken.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just curious, they still don't have anything like Time Machine on a PC, do they?
They don't. But maybe Matt can enlighten us about...
Actually, on Windows, I think 7, the backup and restore tool actually works pretty darn well.
Okay.
So.
I have Windows 11 now.
So going to backup and restore, you can point it to your external hard drive and say, hey, use this for my Windows backup, and it'll pretty much make a copy of your entire user profile on there, and then there's a way to get it back into Windows once you get Windows reinstalled on the machine.
Yeah. So, but that's, I think what you were asking is there a equivalent to, my Mac hard drive crashes and I put a new hard drive in it and I install a new copy of the operating system. And then I ran Migration Assistant and basically puts my computer completely back, you know, puts my user account back together. And I don't know of any tools that'll do that yet, which is astounding to me, quite honestly, that Microsoft has been getting their booty kicked for as long as they have on that.
I know. It's really, to me, kind of, it's unfortunate. The other thing is what I like about Time Machine is you can go back to previous versions of documents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I was gonna clarify. There is a feature in the newer versions of Windows called File Version. Or File History is what it's called.
Yeah.
And it will allow you to do that.
You can turn on versions. You can turn. Is it a pro version or they let you? Because you can turn on volume shadow copy.
Yeah.
And that's basically the old school like server name for what Louis was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there is that capability, but as far as like recovery from catastrophic failure, you're kind of
we'll have to look at it.
I pretty much put stuff on either Dropbox or Apple's, Drive or Google Drive. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have things all over the place,
Yeah.
And then I manually back up my Quicken file.
Uh-huh.
But speaking of Microsoft, they have that version of Teams. And it's funny, I use Teams at work.
Uh-huh.
But I don't need Teams at home. Why would somebody want Teams on their personal computer?
That's a great question because they put it on any machine
on
you install it. It's all there. It's all set to auto run at startup. And it sucks up memory, a significant amount of memory. Yeah, it really does. And so don't have a question for you, but I can commiserate with you on that.
Yeah.
Okay. And
it's probably like AOL Instant Messenger, right?
What, you don't still use that? Come on, man.
Is AIM even still running?
No wonder you haven't answered my last message.
I have a Skype account. I don't know if my AIM account's still active.
That's funny.
Yeah. I do have one quick question. What was your favorite password manager again? Was it 1Pass?
I used Bitwarden.
Bitwarden, because a friend of mine was using one, and then all of a sudden they want to start charging him, and so he's kind of mad.
Mm.
Bitwarden.
Yeah, Bitwarden's open source. It's been audited several times at this point. So their pricing is very fair for their cloud version. So. I would definitely take a look at that.
What do you use, Louis?
I do not use that.
Okay.
I actually have been working with a client on using one called Keeper. And I have actually am favorably impressed with Keeper. I'm always careful. I mean, if a client who's a relatively low savvy level, I don't recommend it for them because you have to interact with it when you go to a new website and set up a new, new autofill information.
Okay.
But yeah, that's the one that I've been kind of partial to.
I keep everything in Evernote in, code.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I keep mine in a publicly accessible document called my LouisPasswords.com. And so. You guys want to go to town on that? Go for it.
The last question I have for you, trying to squeeze them all in here, is I saw that there's now Bluetooth 5, so which is the range is a lot farther than Bluetooth 4. Have you heard of Bluetooth 5?
Wow, I have not. Have you, Matt? Have you heard of Bluetooth 5?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm using it or not, but yes, I've heard of it.
Got it.
You're starting to see it on devices.
Yeah, it's like four times the distance now. I know somebody who had Bluetooth headset in their iPhone. They were at the gym, and they had the iPods, I guess. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they put their phone down on the bench, they walked away, and they were listening to music, and all of a sudden, the music stopped, and they realized somebody had taken their phone. The distance was so pretty far, so they didn't even. They completely forgot where they put it down.
Uh-huh.
Right? Wow. So the point is, even though the range is so much farther, you probably don't want to
keep it in your pocket still. Yeah.
Yeah. But the nice thing is, like, I have these Bose headphones that I use to walk around the house, and I'll have my phone down on the first floor, and I can walk upstairs or into the garage, and I get pretty good reception no matter how But yeah, it's like 30 to 50 meters, which is like, you know, 120.
So I was just looking at the spec on Wikipedia. So the original Bluetooth is 33 feet and up to 100 meters in ideal conditions. Bluetooth 5 is 40 meters and 400, so between 100 and 1,000 feet, depending on conditions.
Yep. If you have a line of sight, it goes farther.
Yeah. Did you know that Bluetooth is actually it's actually a Wi-Fi based technology?
It's, I think, 2.4 gigahertz, isn't it?
I don't know that specifically. Is it?
Okay. Yeah, it's 2.4 to 2.48.
Got it. Yeah. So it is. I've run into issues in areas with high Wi-Fi congestion where I was having Bluetooth issues. It can cross, you know, contaminate each other. So.
Well, and one of the nice things about Bluetooth 5, it has a better interference.
Good. It'll find its own channel better. Yeah.
Yep. It can switch channels.
Got it.
So anyway, then my last thing is about this Bluetooth 5. I'm curious then, like if my Bose, let's say my phone has Bluetooth 5, but my Bose has Bluetooth 4, or 33 feet. I'm really curious how far I can reach if both devices have to have Bluetooth 5 technology. I would think.
I'm sure all the 5 stuff is all backwards compatible, but you're going to be locked into the limitations of the.
And I was wondering if and it looks like Bluetooth LE. I was wondering if audio was part of the LE spec, which it is. So Bluetooth Low Energy. Let's see here. When was this released in Bluetooth 5.2 at CES in 2020? So.
Wow.
So it does a longer, the LE is part of their low energy stuff. It's for longer distances.
Yep.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, anyway.
So, Donna, I wanted to ask you a question. Do you have multiple PCs or do you just have one or like one at home and one at work?
Well, I have my work one, but I can't use it for anything. I have a PC at home that I use for my Quicken and for some other things because I actually have, you know, Word and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, but mostly, then I use my Mac. I have a MacBook Pro.
Got it. I was just going to say, I just discovered a really cool, it's actually an open source tool called SyncThing. And it allows you to, it's not cloud-based. It's basically peer-to-peer. And it makes it really easy to, you basically put it on two different computers and you set up a shared folder on one and then you basically link this like 35 character code or whatever to link them together. And then you can tell the other computer that you want to synchronize, whether it's just like, you can just basically say synchronize the desktop on this one to the desktop on this one, or the documents to this and the documents to that. Or you can just create a folder on the desktop that says synced stuff from my other computer or whatever, you know, and have it all synced to there, you know, so it's not all scattered out all over your desktop or whatever.
Not between a PC and a Mac.
No, it's open source. It's everything.
There is a Mac component, a Mac version of it as well.
Okay.
So, so it's called SyncThing, and it's a great. I mean, I've been fighting that battle with, you know, I've had power users who are just like, I've got two computers and I need them to be the same all the time, you know, and without using like LapLink or something.
Or Dropbox.
Yeah, exactly. And this puts the stuff in the right places so they don't have to go searching for it because they get irritated when they have to do that. So
you said SyncThing or
SyncThing. SyncThing.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. So,
yep. There's your tip for the day. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. We'll talk to you later.
Take care, Donna. Bye. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Bye. Yeah.
All right. That was our foreign correspondent, Donna Dalton, calling in. So,
yeah, I've been using rclone, which is a command line, mm-hmm. and you can basically synchronize between probably 50 different, maybe more than that, but you can synchronize your cloud infrastructure.
Okay.
So you can say, oh, I have something sitting in Dropbox, I want to move it over to Google, and you mm-hmm. run a command and it copies or synchronizes the folders.
Got it.
Yeah. But you can go pretty much anywhere, from anywhere to anywhere, or you can mm-hmm. go from local to one of the clouds, which is what I use mm-hmm. it mostly for backup and things.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a GUI for it yet, but yeah. it's an amazing tool to be able to say, okay, I want my Gmail, I want my Google Cloud stuff to go over to Dropbox or whatever, just let it chew on that.
Yep. I've used tools. They have tools for Synology, network attached storage devices that do that. You can sync your Synology to your OneDrive or whatever, things like that. So, you know, I had one little tidbit because I've been dealing with an issue just lately. I wanted to put it out there to all of our listeners that if you by chance have the recovery phone number for your email set to a landline, fix it as soon as possible. Because bad things will happen. Because, you know, they send those recovery codes, you know, via text, by SMS.
Well, I mean, a lot of them have options to call, but not all of them.
Google doesn't anymore.
Really? Oh, they got rid of it. Oh, yeah, boy.
There's no more. You cannot get a robotic voice to call you and give you a code from Google anymore. It's only by text. And I'm literally in the middle right now of buying a burner phone and porting a landline number over to that burner phone so we can recover a Gmail account. You know, and that's a lot of
That's a lot of work.
That's a lot of hassle, and it's a lot of expense. So anyway, so think really hard about what phone number is set as your recovery, especially on Gmail. And if you have a landline set, get on there and set it to your best friend's number, your spouse's number, whatever, your second cell phone number. So that's all I got.
You've been listening to Geek Speak on Katie and Kay. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer from Roaring Fork Help Desk, in studio with Louie the Computer Guy.
Thanks a lot, Matt.
You're welcome.
We will see you
on
the 17th.
There we go.
Bam. Math.
Math.
In the meantime, do not touch your knob.